So we left off in the Midbar, just a little bit of a quick review. So remember again, in source number one, I'm sorry, approach number one. So remember, we're trying to figure out what is the message of the Midbar. So quick review. First approach we saw so far was what? That the Midbar represents this tension between who? Right? Eretz Yisrael, or really Am Yisrael and the Umos HaOlam, or Eretz Yisrael and the lands of the earth. This idea being that when one of them is settled, the others are desolate, and vice versa. There's never where everyone's on top or everyone's on the bottom. If Yerushalayim is settled, Kesaria is destroyed. If Kesaria is settled, Yerushalayim is destroyed. Second approach we saw, which we spent really last class on, which was the beautiful Ish Kodesh, right? The Piyajetzna explained this idea of Shloye Libcha Chalok Al Hamakom. This idea that the Midbar teaches us that no matter where you are, even in the midst of a midbar, ultimately, again, you have the ability and capacity to spiritually rejuvenate and create a relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with that, we're going to come to the last two approaches. Take a look at number 8. So this is the pasuk from Yirmiyahu. So pasuk that you'll be very familiar with. The pasuk says, "Vayhi devar Hashem elai lemar." Yirmiyahu says, God spoke to me and he said, "Haloch vikarasa ba'azne Yerushalayim lemar." Go and call out to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, Ko amar Hashem, so has God said, Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayich. I remember the chesed of your youth. I'm sorry, Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayich, avas klul osayich, the love of your nuptials. So whatever nuptials means, but the love of like being a newlywed. Lech teich acharai b'midbar, you followed me out into the desert, be'eretz lo zeruah, into an uninhabited land. So what is the Navi saying? What's the message? You've heard this pasuk before. Good. So what's the message? What is Kadosh Baruch Hu? I'm sorry? Excellent. So first of all, the context of this, of course, is like much of Sefer Yirmiyahu is speaking about, unfortunately, the disintegration of the bond between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. So here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost like reflecting on, you remember when we were newlyweds, how beautiful everything was, how wonderful everything was. There was so much simcha, there was so much love. And now look what has happened to us. Excellent. What else? What else is unique about this pasuk? What is the Kadosh Baruch Hu highlighting over here? What was Klal Yisrael willing to do? Which means what? Not the translation, but the deeper meaning. What is it saying? We followed. But not only did we follow, we followed him into what? There's a very important detail, excellent, of Yitzias Mitzrayim that we often overlook, right? Think about this. Anyone here ever go on a car trip with your family somewhere? Yeah. Right? What is the first thing you make sure you do when you go on a car trip with your family? Food, right? And how much food? Right? Too much food, right? It's never, meaning it's never just, okay, we have a 3-hour trip to New Jersey, so let's pack it. It's always, we have a 3-hour trip for New Jersey, but we may get delayed. We might get hungry for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner. Let's plug in the hot plate. You know, whatever you need to do in order to go ahead and make sure, right? No one travels without ample provisions and ample food. So I want to share with you something amazing. How many Jews left Mitzrayim approximately? About 3.5 million, right? If we have 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60, somewhere in the realm of 3 million, 3.5 million Jews left. What did they leave with?
Matzah.
Right? Think about this for just a moment. They left with matzah. They left with matzah. Nothing more. Now, the irony is, they left with gold, they left with silver, right? They left with a lot of different stuff. But the only food provisions they left with was matzah. Not bread, right? Because remember, there was no time to allow the dough to rise. Matzah. So think about this just a moment. Think about this. I mean, Hashem, you'll think about this one day from the perspective of a parent. What it means to be able to leave somewhere where you don't know if you're going to be able to sustain your children. I remember, again, this is before any talk about man, or any talk about a be'er, anything, right? All we know is that we're going to Eretz Yisrael. And in order to get, yes? Even 3 days with a bit of matzah. And it was always, I don't know if they thought it was going to be 3 days that short, meaning again, it would certainly take more than that for 3.5 million people to go ahead and journey from Mitzrayim to Canaan. But even if you want to say it was for a short amount of time, you're talking about a nation of people going out without provisions to the desert, Right? So it's pretty dramatic. You're right. They did not think they were going for 40 years. It was supposed to be a much, much, much shorter amount of time. But Lamai said they still went out without nothing. What does that highlight? Yes? It's a good question. It could very well be that they took what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded them to take. Shbaruch commands them to take gold and silver and commands them to take matzahs. Shbaruch Hu did not command that they pack up anything else. So that could be. That could be. So that's what comes out over here is we often think about Yitzias Mitzrayim in general, about the incredible display of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love and kindness, which of course it is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed us from the Kor HaBarzel, from the iron cauldron that was known as Mitzrayim. But there's another piece that the Navi highlights, which is, we followed. We followed. You know what you call that? It's called blind love. Not just blind faith. That's blind love. Klal Yisrael was so in love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You wouldn't know that necessarily from our behavior in the desert, but there was so much love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael that literally we were willing to follow him out into the great unknown. Into the great unknown. That's what the Navi is saying. Zachati lach chesed nurach. Remember how HaKadosh Baruch Hu referred to this? I remember the kindness of you. What's the kindness? What's the chesed HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking about? Who's doing the chesed here? So this is amazing, right? It's God's remembering the chesed that we, Klal Yisrael, did for him. What's the chesed I did for God? Lechtech acharai b'midbar. I remember the days that you were so in love with me that you followed me out into the desert. You followed me out into the desert. This was the great love affair between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. You followed me out into the desert. So Rashi says in number 9, take a look. So remember, as was mentioned before, the real context over here, of course, is the Navi telling Klal Yisrael, "Oy, how far you've fallen!" Right? The Eich Naflu Giborim. You were once so great. You were once so connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Nebuch. Look what has happened to you. That's the real like subtext of this. But here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, "You know, Klal Yisrael, if you wanted to do tshuva and come back to me, I would accept you with open arms." I would accept you with complete love. So again, I just want to point out, just as an aside, just from the Yetzias Mitzrayim narrative, I think this is a piece that is often overlooked, the incredible spiritual heroism and love that Klal Yisrael has for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we followed God out. But perhaps there's a deeper message over here as well. And kind of going back to the question I was just asked before, so why didn't we take food, right? Or why, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same God, yeah, you would have think about this logically, the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling me to take gold and silver, bless you, tell me to take gold and silver, shall also tell me to take what? Food, right? Some food, some water, some provisions. You're going to be in the desert, whether it's going to be 3 days, 7 days, 2 weeks, take some stuff with you. Yes. They did. So remember, but interestingly enough, that's an excellent question. You know where that question is asked? But when Klal Yisrael complains that they don't have basar. They don't have basar. So you don't have basar. You don't have basar. You have flocks and flocks of animals. So it could be, interestingly enough, we know that no one slaughtered anything, it appears, until Matan Torah. And it appears also that the livestock that came out with them was part of like the reparations for slavery, right? That wasn't looked at as food items. That was looked at much more ultimately, again, as repayment for their servitude. So why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but even if it's so, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say explicitly, take food, pack up food? So perhaps what's happening over here is as follows. Part of the spiritual maturation for Klal Yisrael was taking a step into the unknown. You see, in order to grow in life, there is always that moment where you must venture out into the unknown. You must leave your comfort zone and go into something you don't know and something that frankly could be scary, overwhelming, a bit ominous. So, you know, there are different kinds of people in life, and some people in life never like to leave their comfort zone, right? They'll accomplish things that are only within reach. But they'll be too nervous ultimately to go ahead and extend their reach any further than they're absolutely sure they are capable of attaining. And those people, who could be very good people, lead stymied or stunted lives. Because if you don't push yourself out of your comfort zone to accomplish more, if you don't challenge yourself and push yourself to perform more than you've ever done, then at the end of the day, you don't experience true growth. You see, part of this was HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking Klal Yisrael, are you willing to venture out of the confines of the world you know into the great unknown of the Midbar? Are you willing to go out of your comfort zone to accomplish great things? And Klal Yisrael, amazingly enough, with all of our faults that we exhibited during our 40 years in the desert, Klal Yisrael passes this with flying colors. Lech teich acharai b'midbar b'eretz lo zeruah. You followed me out. I couldn't believe you did it. I didn't know if you had it in you. But yet, amazingly enough, you followed me out into the wasteland, to the barrenness of the desert. And what happens when you venture out of your comfort zone into the barrenness of the desert? What's the next step? What happens right after that? Kriyas Yamsuf. What happens after Kriyas Yamsuf? Matan Torah. Right? There's a lot of stuff that happens in between, but Matan Torah. The idea is, greatness is reserved for those who are willing to venture out of the known into the great desert of the unknown. And perhaps that's the message over here as well. If you go back for just a moment to number one, what does the Midbar say? The Midbar says, Yesusum Midbar Vitzia Visagel Arava. The wilderness and the desert shall rejoice. Right? Visagel Arava. Visifrach Kechavatzelis. The arid region shall exult. Blossom like a rose. So it's interesting. I understand if it's the desert, it doesn't blossom. And if it blossoms, then what? Then what? Then it's not the desert. So Elamai, perhaps what the desert is saying is like this. Sometimes in order to truly blossom, and sometimes in order to fully self-actualize, and sometimes in order to really accomplish things in life, you have to venture into the desert. You have to live a life of Lech Tech Acharai Bamidbar. The desert represents the unknown. The desert represents, again, leaving the constructs and the confines that you've lived your life in until now and venturing and pushing yourself into something new. You ever hear people sometimes say, you know, I only like to do things that I know I will be able to accomplish and achieve. You ever hear people say stuff like that? And often that's followed up. That's because I'm a, what's the word that normally comes with that? So you said the word I'm going to say in just a moment, but what do people normally say? I'm a perfectionist, so I only like to do things that I know I will be able to succeed at. But in reality, they're really what? A coward. Really, it's scary, right? Most of us like to live life within the comfort zone. I don't want to push myself too hard. I don't want to create any incredible expectations because I don't want to fail. So therefore, I'll push myself a little bit, but I'm going to still remain within the comfort zone. I'm not going to push myself anything beyond that. But at the end of the day, that's not where true accomplishment comes from. True accomplishment comes from where when you reach even farther than you think you can. I'll tell you something amazing. Where did we learn this concept from? Right? Who learned this concept from? None other than Bitya, the daughter of Paro. Right? What does the pasuk say? Right? So Bas Paro is right, Rochetes al yada yor. What happens? She sees the basket. What does she do? Vatishlach asamasa. Which Rashi translates either means she sent a maidservant, but she sent her hand. So remember, what does Rashi HaKadosh comment on that pasuk? What happened? Miracle happened. Right? Her hand extended even further. She was able to reach the basket of Moshe, of baby Moshe. So the Lublin Rav, from Meir Shapiro Lublin, asks a very simple question. He says, I don't understand. Well, what's the obvious question?
Why would she even try?
Right? If I want to turn off the light switch in the back of the room, and sometimes I'm going to go, I'm not going to do that. That's ridiculous. Right? There's no point in even extending my hand. Of course, my reach doesn't reach. So why would Bas Paro extend her hand to go out and reach for a basket that was clearly outside of her reach? And I says, Lublin Rav, you see the mark of great people. Great people reach as far as they can. And they believe that if what they're reaching for has meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help them the rest of the way. Or in other words, sometimes God's reach begins where my reach ends. If I'm willing to push myself and exert myself as much as possible, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you're willing to push yourself, if you're willing to venture into the desert, I'll help you accomplish as well. Bas Paro, you're going to stretch out your hand? Incredible. I knew your hand could only reach so far, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to partner with you. You start reaching, and I'll make sure that ultimately, again, you could acquire that which you are truly reaching for. an incredible, incredible idea. So therefore, again, perhaps this is the message of the Midbar. The Midbar says, as much as it's arid, as much as it's empty, sometimes it's only the Midbar where you could truly blossom. The Midbar where you could only truly actualize. Because sometimes it is only if you push yourself outside of your comfort zone that you have the ability to accomplish anything truly great. Let's look at the last approach for the Midbar, and this is the Malbim. The Malbim makes a very interesting observation here. So the Malbim writes in number 10, the Yesh Hevdel Bein Simcha Sason Gil. So here, what the Malbim picks up on is as follows. If you take a look back in number 1 for just a moment, so the Midbar, when it says the follows, it says the following, Yisisum, your Yisusum Midbar Vitzia. The wilderness desert shall rejoice. So Yesusum is what word? Is what word? Sason. Sason translate as? Sason? Joy. Joy. Okay. There's Sason. What else does it say? Visagel Arava. Sagel is what word?
Gila.
Gila. Gila means? You could say it. Joy. Right? Kind of happy. Right? All of these words, see, here's what's different about Lashon HaKodesh versus English. You see, in English, the word happiness, joy, they're synonymous. They can be used interchangeably, right? I'm in a state of happiness. I am happy. I am joyful. Those things kind of mean the same thing. In Lashon HaKodesh, there is no such thing as redundant words. So even if words sound synonymous, they always have different meanings. So says the Malbim, here the Pasuk is employing two different lashonos of happiness or of joy, sason and gila. And of course, again, there's another word, which is not in this Pasuk, but it's the primary word, which is simcha. So we have three words for joy and happiness. Sason, the truth is we have more than three words, but we'll focus on these three for now. Sason, gila, simcha. Says the Malbim, what's the difference? And this is an incredible Malbim. Take a look at number 10. He says, V'yesh hevdel bein simcha, sason, and gil. There's a difference between sason, simcha, or simcha, sason, and gila. What's the difference? Listen to this explanation. Ha-sason, hu ha-pa'ulos ha-chitzonios, she-yaseh la-haros ha-simcha. He says, sason are external behaviors Sason are the external behaviors which represent simcha. So they are external behaviors which are associated with simcha. So an example of this might be
smiling.
Right? Smiling. Kindness to others. Generally, again, people who are kind are generally in a good state of simcha or in a good state of happiness themselves. So sason are the external manifestations of internal happiness. Kimo tof, kinor, umachol, kidome. Playing instruments, right? Playing instruments could be an incredible external manifestation of simcha. Va-simcha, va-gil hin nafshim. This is very interesting. Simcha and gil are internal feelings of joy. So simcha and gila are internal feelings of joy. Sason is the external manifestation of joy. So watch this, but still, so simcha and gila can't mean the same thing. They must also mean different things. Levatcha simcha simcha tmidis haratzufa v'hagil hu al davar sheneschadish kamo metzia o besor tova. This is incredible. Simcha is consistent joy. Consistent joy. Gila is what we'll call episodic or periodic joy. Gila is when I'm happy because of something that has occurred. He says, davar sheneschadish, something new that has occurred. Metzia, o besar tover, good news, I got something. So now we have our definitions, right? So let's work backwards. Simcha is? Constant internal joy. Gila?
Situational,
periodic, episodic internal joy. Ultimately, sason is?
External
manifestation of joy. Now watch this. So let's go back to number 1 for just a moment. So look what the Midbar writes. Midbar Omer. Yesusum Midbar Vitzia. What does the Midbar say? Perhaps, according to Ma, what the Midbar is saying is like this. Even when you are in the Midbar of life, what does the Midbar mean? Remember, like we saw this before, what does Midbar represent? In the previous approach, it represented the unknown. But up until now, what does Midbar represent for us? Nothingness, which refers to what state in life? Galus. What else? What about on a personal level? I'm sorry?
Low emotional
state. In other words, not a good place. The midbar represents the barren points in life where I'm just feel, I don't feel good. Maybe it's because life is not good, or quote unquote, maybe it's because my circumstances are very difficult. Maybe it's my circumstances are fine, but emotionally I'm in a bad place. The midbar represents the challenging circumstances in life. So look what the midbar says. Yisusum, even when you're in the midbar, even when you're in difficult situations in life, what do you need? You need sason. What does sason mean? Remember, what is sason? External manifestations of joy. What is the midbar saying? Fake it till you make it, right? The midbar is saying that sometimes in life, even if you don't really feel happy, you have to behave happy. You have to behave happy. And why is that? Why is it that if I don't feel happy, I have to behave happy? Why is that? Two reasons. Number one. So first of all, the concept of acharei apulos nimshachos halavavos. Did I tell you the Rabbi Tversky story? There's an incredible Rabbi Tversky story. Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tversky, who's a noted psychiatrist, mental professionalist, was saying that one time he was attending a conference, a mental health conference, with like the top clinicians in the world. And he was sitting across someone who was known to be like an internationally famous clinician. And they're both listening to a lecture. And he sees the man sitting across him going like this with his mouth. So Tversky, the way he writes about it is quite humorous. He's like, it looked like that the patients took over the asylum, wondering, what's the matter with this guy? Right? This is this world-renowned psychologist or psychiatrist, and he's like playing with his mouth the whole time. So Tversky goes over to him. I guess at like a mental health conference, people are very open with their feelings. And he said, can I ask you something? What's the matter with you? Like what are you doing with your mouth? So the man says something amazing. He said, you know, sometimes in life I've come to find that if there are situations where I don't feel happy, if I manipulate the corners of my mouth into a smile, after enough time, it sticks. So sometimes, even when you don't feel happy internally, when you don't have your simcha, or you don't have your sason, sometimes you still have to find you don't have your gila. Sometimes you have to find your sason. Sometimes you have to make yourself externally happy with the hope that external happiness will somehow lead to internal happiness. The fake it till you make it idea. There's another reason, by the way, why you need to do this, which is why your face is public. Remember again, if you want any level of healthy human relationships, who does everyone tend to stay away from? The person who looks unhappy, right? You know, that's the person who you never ask them, how's your day going? Right? Because what happens if you ask them how your day's going? Right? You know what happens. Everybody knows a person like this. How's my day? You want to know how my day's going? Where should I start? Right? You want AM? You want PM? Do you want just today? You want today and yesterday? You want childhood? You want adolescence? You want young adulthood? Do you want severe, less severe, traumatic? Tell me where to start. I'm happy to tell you how my day's going. You're like, oh my gosh, I really was just trying to be pleasant. Right? Generally, what happens to people like that? So all we know, we laugh at it, but people like that, generally, we avoid those kind of people. We just avoid them because the truth is, it's too emotionally taxing to be able to deal with farbissina people, as they say, with bitter, difficult, broken people. It's just difficult. It's just too difficult. So therefore, again, the Midbar is teaching us something amazing. Even if you're living in the Midbar and your life is difficult and your circumstances may be a bit overwhelming and difficult to grapple with, you must find your sason. You must find your sason. Even if you don't feel it outside, put on a happy face. Put on a smile. As the Mishnah of it says, something amazing, right? Heaven mekabel kol adam besever panim yafos. Probably one of sometimes the hardest halachos to observe, right? I could keep kashrus, I could keep all the different things, keep Shabbos. You want me to always smile? That's a difficult one because I don't always feel like smiling. And sometimes things are really difficult and things are really overwhelming and things are really just traumatic for me. And therefore, again, but yet the halacha is, you have to greet every person ultimately with a smile, both because your face is a shesarabim and you have no right to take away from someone else's simchas achayim, but on a deeper level, Chazal also understood that we want you to have normal relationships. And if you're not going to present as a happy person, then you're not going to have normal relationships. That's lesson number one, says the Midbar. Yisusum Midbar Vitzia. In life, you have to go ahead and work on your sason, your external simcha, even if you're not feeling it on the inside, and something amazing will happen. Push yourself to feel it on the outside, and over time, in Meretz Hashem, you will come to feel it on the inside as well. But then the Midbar goes on. What does the Midbar say? V'sagel arava. It adds in what? It adds in gila. Right? So remember again, according to the Malbim, what's gila? What's gila? Right? Episodic or situational, periodic simcha. Right? Ultimately, again, simcha that is rooted in something nice happening. Right? So amazingly enough, what the Midbar is saying is, I'll tell you what's interesting is, what's missing from the list over here? Simcha, right? The Midbar never sees that, because what's simcha according to the Malbim? Constant and consistent happiness. Why does the Midbar leave that out? Because if you're in a Midbar, you obviously don't have it. Well said. Or what else could it mean?
When you're in Galus, you're missing something.
Good, excellent. What else could it mean? Maybe what it means is the overwhelming majority of people don't have simcha. It could be that the overwhelming majority of people don't have constant and consistent happiness. Hopefully we experience gila, which is episodic or situational joy, and we find the courage ultimately again to engage in sason, external manifestations of joy. But it could very well be that most people don't experience real simcha. That is a real possibility, or at least to say that, maybe say it a little bit differently, that real simcha is incredibly elusive. Incredibly elusive. But before you go ahead and you work on your simcha, work on your gila. Work on your gila. Do you find happiness in the things that are really happiness worthy? Do you find gila in the happy things? Because all of us have good things in life. Maybe I also have difficult things in life. Maybe I have challenges in life also. But I also have good things. Do those good things generate a sense of gila inside of me? If they do, then one day in Meretz Hashem, I will come ultimately to a sense of simcha. But simcha is not mentioned in the Midbar, either because, as was mentioned, if you're in the Midbar, maybe you can't have simcha. But I think it's deeper. I think it's ultimately, again, the Pasuk telling us, the Vazisha telling us, that for most people, simcha, consistent, constant simcha, is elusive. But if we work on ourselves to have gila, and we work on ourselves ultimately to have sason, then maybe we'll get to a state ultimately again of simcha. But I think the Midbar is also teaching us another important lesson, which is, and this is one of the most important lessons in life, is happiness is a choice. Happiness is a choice. You see, a lot of times in life, when you ask people about happiness, they assume happiness, what do most, let me say differently. Most people assume that happiness is
a reaction.
I was going to use the word result. Happiness is a result. It's a result of what? It's a result of what? Right? It's a result of, I don't know, having the things I want, being the kind of person I want, having the experience. And these are different things. For some people, they'll say, happiness is the result of money, enough money. Happiness is the result of healthy children. Happiness is the result of being a Talmid Chacham. Happiness is the result of destination vacation. Whatever. People have different things. But often we assume that simcha is a result of something else. And what the Midbar is saying is, no. Simcha is a choice. Every day you must make a choice. Do I want to be happy or do I want to be miserable? And the truth is, there's sometimes very good reason to go in either direction. Right? Sometimes I have good reason to be miserable, right? And sometimes I have very good reason to be happy. And I would say on any given day, you generally have a good reason to be miserable or you have good reason to be happy. It's for most of us, that's life. And life, happiness is a choice. It's not a result. It's not a reaction. It's ultimately, again, a choice you make each and every day. And this is why the Midbar is saying it. Because even in the Midbar, even if you find yourself in the midst of compromised circumstances of the Midbar, even there, happiness is a choice. Even there, you make a choice about the kind of person you want to be and the kind of life you want to lead. So says the Midbar, it's true. The Midbar doesn't talk about simcha because simcha is a heightened level. But the Midbar says, in the Midbar, you could find gila, and in the Midbar, you could find sason. You just have to make the choice to want it. Or in other words, to say it a little bit differently, attitude in life is a choice. We often think that our attitude is a function of our life circumstances, or my attitude dictates, or my circumstances dictate my attitude. That is not true. My circumstances can fuel my attitude. My circumstances ultimately leave an impression or influence my attitude. But my attitude in life is my choice. You know, there's an incredible quote from William James. Right? William James writes, the author, he says, the greatest, listen to these words, the greatest discovery of any generation is that a human can alter his life by altering his attitude. One more time. The greatest discovery of any generation is that a human can alter his life by altering his attitude. You control your simcha levels in life. You don't control the midbar. So you don't control if you're in the midbar. You don't control if you're in Mitzrayim or if you're in Eretz Yisrael. That kind of, I'm talking about the situational, emotional Eretz Yisrael midbar. A lot of times those circumstances are visited upon me, but I control my attitude in those places. And that's what the midbar is teaching us. Even if you find yourself in the midbar of compromised circumstances, happiness is a choice. You make a choice to be besimcha, or you make a choice to be miserable. You make a choice to be besason, external manifestations of joy, exude joy. You make a choice to be in gila. And if you make the right choices, then even if initially I could only muster up the strength for gila and muster up the strength for sason, but those who make a choice to be happy, even in difficult circumstances in life, ultimately find their way to the true happiness, the happiness of simcha. All right, to stop over here for today. And Amir Hashem, Monday we will have our final exam. Of course.
Did you read it through notes? And when we were talking about Talmud, it was created in part.